Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Big Bend Sentinel for Thursday, October 7th, 2021. Grant awarded to Big Bend Conservation Alliance and local groundwater districts. Far West Texas. The Federal Bureau of Reclamation has awarded a WaterSmart Applied Science grant to the Big Bend Conservation Alliance in partnership with the groundwater conservation districts of Brewster, Culberson, and Presidio counties. The highly competitive WaterSmart program funds non-federal entities to develop tools and information to support and enhance water management and improve water supply reliability. The $48,000 grant will fund 50% of a common data management platform that will enable the three districts to centralize data from ongoing monitoring programs, integrate historical data, and provide the public with access. The project will also fund a shared data module so that groundwater districts can form a more holistic picture of the health of shared aquifers that cross county boundaries. According to Summer Webb, general manager of both the Brewster and Culberson counties groundwater conservation districts, aquifers don't recognize political boundaries. Having the ability to look at our shared aquifers more holistically will drastically improve our ability to research, permit, and plan for the future health of our aquifers and communities. At the time of the application, the groundwater districts in Brewster, Culberson, Hudspeth, Jeff Davis, and Presidio counties were in the final phase of a 5-year cycle to define state-mandated desired future conditions for Groundwater Management Area 4. Also known as DFCs, desired future conditions constitute agreements among districts concerning acceptable levels of drawdown in shared aquifers over a 50-year period. In reviewing the DFCs for final approval, some in the group had expressed reservations about the quality of the supporting data. Webb observed that it's been difficult to compile reliable data sets across the entire groundwater management area, which has made decision-making tough when it comes to shared aquifers. According to Trey Gerfers, Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District Board Chairman, the WaterSmart grant seemed like a perfect fit because our district had already implemented this kind of software with great success. If we could get the rest of the districts in our groundwater management area to implement the same platform, we felt that the quality and utility of the data could be improved substantially. Big Bend Conservation Alliance worked with the three groundwater districts to write the grant and fund the shared data module. As a former technologist, I've seen the transformative effect that systems and shared data can have in operations. We had already seen the benefits with Presidio County leading the way, so we had an excellent local model to take to the neighboring counties, said Shelley Bernstein, the organization's executive director. The shared data module is being developed so that any groundwater district which is using the same software platform can freely adopt it for a small setup fee, helping make available and promote the benefits of shared data across Texas. Neighboring districts, including Middle Pecos and Reeves County groundwater conservation districts, are currently in the process of adopting the same software, moving the establishment of a common data platform across the entire region much closer to reality. Webb is excited about the new data platform because it will also provide a much-needed end-user ability to look at the data in a friendly map view that will help landowners make informed decisions. The implementation of the data management software that this grant provides will also make these districts eligible to become data providers to the National Groundwater Monitoring Network of the United States Geological Survey, which will unlock hundreds of thousands of dollars in future funding for water quality testing and additional infrastructure, such as monitoring wells. This increased federal funding is also a creative way for groundwater districts, such as Brewster and Presidio, whose budgets are funded almost entirely by county taxes, to fulfill their missions without any additional burden on the local tax base. By the end of the next five-year cycle for defining desired future conditions, GRFRS is confident that the supporting data will be much more robust. A region-wide system to monitor groundwater quantity and quality is well within reach in the next 2 to 5 years. This can only be a positive in providing us with the data we need to conserve and protect the groundwater we all rely on. In an era of so much bad news, it's an encouraging sign of what's possible if we work together. Local health care officials join forces to pursue $8.2 million grant for health care improvements in Presidio and Terlingua. By Abby Perot, ABBIE at BigBendSentinel.com. Presidio Terlingua. A consortium of local entities are pursuing an ambitious $8.2 million project to grow healthcare access in Presidio and Terlingua. The Big Bend Regional Hospital District and Preventative Care Health Services are partnering, along with the City of Presidio and Terlingua Fire and EMS, in pursuit of a multi-million dollar United States Department of Agriculture impact grant to advance ideas and solutions for long-term sustainability of rural health care. The project will request $6.6 million in grant funds and require a 25% match, meaning local entities will have to come up with $1.6 million to contribute, a hefty effort for rural communities. Already, Presidio County Commissioners threw their weight behind the project last week, committing $275,000 to the project over the next 3 years, should the grant funding come through. BBRHD's Executive Director, J.D. Newsom, has taken a leading role in the grant writing application and in the formation of the project's goals. If the grant is given to the project, Newsom will also help seek support from area foundations to help alleviate the burden of the matching funds that will fall on the area's small rural communities. This week, Newsom explained the four-pronged plan, which begins with preventative health care. In Presidio, that means supporting PCHS Presidio Clinic during the day by adding a behavioral counselor to the clinic. In Terlingua, PCHS would begin operating a part-time clinic there for 2 days a week. Currently, there are no health care providers in Terlingua, forcing residents to drive hours to see a doctor. The second prong is to extend clinic operations in Presidio to have after-hours care. When the clinics stop seeing patients at 3 p.m., Presidio residents have to rely on EMS for medical care, often resulting in long trips to see a physician at the hospital in Alpine, nearly 90 miles away. Hospital visits can be costly for patients, and the EMS department's ambulances wear down and break down quickly when making so many trips. To replace a single ambulance, the cities, counties, and the hospital district end up footing a bill that can run over $300,000. The EMS providers oftentimes are not equipped to determine if somebody needs to go to the hospital or not, so the default is to go to the hospital because they're not able to make that determination, said Newsom. By having a clinic open and available, hospital trips could be reduced. Hopefully, with the after-hours clinic, the doctor or nurse could say, "It's an ankle sprain. We'll wrap it up for you, and here's a plan. You don't need to go to the hospital by ambulance now," said Newsom. It's about triage. The grant funding would allow PCHS to extend their hours and provide after-hours care Monday through Friday from 3 p.m. to 11 p.m., adding 8 more hours of local medical care. While 24/7 care is ideal, Newsom said that they see the most need during the 3 p.m. to 11 p.m. hours, and for now, the project is more cost-effective to rely on the hospital for overnight care. The Presidio Clinic would also be open 5 hours every other Saturday. The third prong is a telemedicine component, broadening access to telemedicine in both Terlingua and Presidio by purchasing equipment so people can see specialists that are otherwise in far-flung cities like El Paso or Odessa Midland. In Terlingua and Presidio, where not everyone has internet access, providing telemedicine in the clinics opens up access where it wasn't before. The fourth prong, which I believe will be transformative and innovative, is around emergency medical services, Newsom said. What we're proposing to do is establish a community paramedicine program in both the city of Presidio and with Terlingua Fire and EMS. Paramedics already working in the area would be trained and certified as community paramedics, who could visit local residents' homes to work one-on-one with people who need extra education and help managing their chronic medical conditions. Newsom said, "If we can help people manage their diabetes or blood pressure, we're reducing the number of transports or ER visits. We have a lot of elderly folks who have 6, 7, 8 prescriptions and need help understanding how to take those. Community paramedics are another layer of support for people who need that," explained Newsom. In Presidio and Terlingua, many agree that the needs are huge. "I've been working with people at the city of Presidio for 5 years to try to come up with a workable healthcare solution for Presidio," said Presidio's city attorney Ron Ponton. "They don't have any doctor who lives there, and the family practice health clinic is only there for preventative care, not acute care. They've tried to come up with ways to run a micro-hospital or bring in an outside El Paso company to open a facility for acute care, but none of them would work," Ponton said, "because there isn't the money in the population to support a bigger effort, such as a micro-hospital. This will allow Presidio residents for the first time to receive the first-class medical care that they deserve," Ponton said of the new project. "People in Alpine would not stand to have to drive 90 miles to Presidio to see a doctor, but that is what the reality has been for Presidio." Sarah Allen Colando, a Brewster County Commissioner for Terlingua, said she is cautiously optimistic about the effort to bring a part-time clinic to her town. She said even for just 2 days a week, having a clinic would be absolutely transformative for Terlinguans. Terlingua residents are currently forced to drive to Alpine or further to get medical care, or else forego care altogether. Currently, parents have to drive 1 to 2 hours each way to take their kids to routine medical appointments in other towns. Not only does one child miss a school day, but because they have no guarantee that they'll be back before the school day ends, parents may have to take all of their kids out of school for the whole day, Colando explained. "Of course, our older residents often have medical conditions that require routine treatment and or monitoring, but since they can't get that simple care nearby, they have to travel or simply ignore their medical needs at their own risk," the commissioner said. "Too many Terlingua residents have died from diseases that could have been treated and managed if only they'd had the routine care which would have spotted it early. On top of improving health care access, the project will also add jobs in Presidio and Terlingua, areas where work can be hard to come by. The budget currently funds nurses, a nurse supervisor, a doctor, a nurse practitioner, a behavioral health specialist, an office manager, receptionist, medical records custodian, and medical billing person. They've got 16 positions in their budget, said Newsom of PCHS requests from the project. Some of those may not be new, maybe half of them are, and the other half are going to be supplementing or expanding current jobs. The grant application is due early next week, and while the consortium had hoped to bring in Texas Tech University's Health Sciences Center in El Paso, the institution needed a minimum of 60 days to consider committing, and time was running out. Newsom said they would still be able to join in at a later point in the project. The group is hoping to begin an EMS institute with Texas Tech's Health Science Center, which will provide support and capacity that Presidio and Terlingua wouldn't normally have access to. That includes training, continuing education, helping update Presidio and Terlingua's medical protocols, and acting as medical directors for the Presidio EMS. Once the grant application is submitted on October 12th, Newsom said it's going to be very competitive, with an estimated 10 to 15 applicants getting funded nationwide. But looking at the scoring matrix, the demographics of Presidio, I think, are going to give us an advantage, said Newsom. The USDA grant is part of the American Rescue Plan Act, where federal dollars are being allocated across the country to assist in COVID-19 recovery and improve health care access. If the Presidio Interlingua application is successful, Newsom said, we're going to infuse $8.2 million into improving access to health care in a large geographic area. That's going to be transformative. Even if the funding doesn't arrive, Newsom said the concerted effort between each of the separate entities will lead to better outcomes going forward. It's been really amazing that you've got folks who haven't sat down together in a long time, sitting down to talk about this issue, including the hospital, the two counties, the city of Presidio, Brewster County's Emergency Services District, Terlingua Fire and EMS, and Texas Tech. I think that spirit is going to continue as we continue to look for ways to bring resources to the region. I think it's especially important to figure out how we can leverage our local resources to bring in these federal dollars. I don't think that we can solve any of these problems by ourselves or as single entities, Newsom said. I think it's going to take all of us coming together to solve these really big healthcare problems. There's grants and monies out there, and it's going to take all of us looking at those, evaluating and exploring these opportunities. Multi-agency rescue in Big Bend National Park. Alpine. United States Border Patrol and its entities, along with multiple local agencies under a unified command led by the National Park Service, rescued a lost hiker in Big Bend National Park. Late in the afternoon of September 27, 2021, the National Park Service received information that a female hiker was overdue in Big Bend National Park. A hasty search did not result in any new information before dark. Favorable weather conditions in the park and the known experience level of the hiker did not necessitate an immediate overnight search that would put the rescuers at risk. Overnight, Border Patrol agents, Border Patrol Search, Trauma and Rescue, B-O-R-S-T-A-R, National Park Service, Department of Public Safety, Customs and Border Protection Air and Marine Operations, United States Border Patrol Horse and K-9 units, and mobile technology were mobilized and deployed to the last known location of the hiker in the Chisos Basin. After more than 16 hours of searching, agents assigned to the Border Patrol Horse Patrol Unit were able to successfully locate the footprints of the lost hiker and track them to a remote location in Juniper Canyon, where an agent heard faint screaming. The hiker was found responsive and was immediately tended to by Borstar paramedics. She was then flown by a Customs and Border Protection Air and Marine Operations UH-60 Black Hawk helicopter to Big Bend Regional Medical Center in Alpine, Texas. The coordinated actions of all agencies involved led to the successful rescue of a lost hiker, said Big Bend Sector Chief Sean L. McGoffin. This is a great example where multiple local agencies pooled their resources to work together to save a life. We appreciate the close working partnerships in the Big Bend region. Big Bend Sector and National Park Service remind everyone to remain vigilant, keep in contact with the other members of their party, and prepare for environmental changes when hiking. Water, building improvements, hot topics at American Rescue Plan Funds Workshop by Sam Karras. Sam at BigBendSentinel.com. Marfa, the Presidio County Commissioner's Court met in a special session last week to discuss the use of American Rescue Plan funds granted to the county by the federal government. The American Rescue Plan was greenlit by the Biden administration in March 2021 and is perhaps best known among taxpayers as the legislation responsible for those $1,400 stimulus checks. Now, that stimulus is starting to roll out to local governments. Presidio County was awarded $650,000 in stimulus to be used in fiscal year 2021-22 and anticipates another round of $650,000 stimulus in FY 2022-23 for a grand total of $1.3 million. That's a significant amount of extra cash for a county that, despite its massive size and bustling tourism economy, ranks among the state's poorest. County Auditor Patricia Roach explained that the $1.3 million figure was derived from the county's revenue loss due to COVID-19 in 2020, calculated at $1.1 million. The White House's official ARP fact sheet explains that these funds are intended for maintaining vital services through the aftershocks of budget shortfalls caused by the pandemic. Roach and Presidio County Attorney Rod Ponton were on hand to help commissioners brainstorm with a realistic understanding of what these federal funds could be used for. Precinct 2 Commissioner Eloy Aranda was quick to remind those present of a common refrain among Presidio County residents: we pay our taxes, but our roads are in bad shape. Roach and Ponton explained that the use of these funds for road maintenance within city limits would be a tough sell, as the funds are explicitly marked for county use. A grant commissioner would be appointed down the line to help the commissioners better access the funding. Precinct 4 Commissioner Buddy Knight brought up the practical concerns of new roofing and climate-controlled storage for the county jail and courthouse, where the bulk of the county's records are kept. It's our responsibility as a county to keep those records safe. County Clerk Florcita Subilla echoed his concerns. Some of our books are just coming apart, she said. And these records can decide whether you get a loan or a house. Discussion of water infrastructure took up the bulk of the meeting. County Judge Cinderella Guevara floated the idea of a storage tank for potable water citing the problems navigated by rural communities like Candelaria, plagued by chronic water shortages. Commissioner Aranda brought in outside experts to discuss the possibility of using the funds to extend water infrastructure from the city of Presidio to Presidio Leli Airport, which has been a headache for the county and city government for years. "We do so many life-saving flights out of Presidio," said Presidio County Airport Manager Chase Snodgrass. "Right now, we're just hauling water from the city, and it's not potable water. The airport, to fully function, is going to need water." That would open up possibilities for a customs office to support more international traffic at the airport and a medical triage station to serve patients waiting for flights or long-distance ambulance journeys to medical care. "The biggest expense is just the length," Engineer Ramon Carrasco reminded the commissioners. "The piping itself is one of the many products that saw its price balloon during the pandemic, and the existing water infrastructure is about 1.3 miles short of reaching the airport." Trey Gerfers, chairman of the Presidio County Underground Water Conservation District, closed out the meeting by imploring commissioners to consider big, bold projects alongside overdue maintenance concerns. "These are once-in-a-lifetime funds coming at us," he said. "How can we be ready for these huge droughts that are coming our way?" Gerfers offered up a few relatively inexpensive ideas, including an aquifer storage and recovery project that captures rainwater during heavy monsoon season storms and stores it underground. "The system diverts rainwater from city streets, where it can cause massive damage before evaporating. It's like a savings account, but for water," Gerfers explained. "We want better water, cleaner water, and more water well into the future," he said. No action was taken at the September 29th workshop, but Presidio County residents can expect these ideas to find their way into agenda meetings down the line as the county makes critical decisions about how to spend their federal windfall.
Hi, this is Jack. I'm recording the Fort Stockton Pioneer for Thursday, October 7th, 2021. Renovations continue at CVB Center by Megan Waring. A new audio system at CVB Convention Center was up for discussion at the Fort Stockton City Council special meeting on October 5th. Council approved a request for proposals for standalone audio systems in the meeting rooms, theater, and main banquet hall. Individual systems will permit the convention center to withhold multiple events at once without interruptions and disturbance. This building was already pre-wired for a lot of stuff, Fort Stockton Mayor Chris Alexander said. There are speakers in the outside area where it was the putt-putt and golf underneath the awning. It's a fairly sophisticated system. We just felt that we needed to go out for an RFP to try to get three or four quotes for actual people that put this together professionally. The city is also gearing up for the Big Bend Open Race 2.0 next weekend. The convention center will house the car show and parade on Friday, October 15th, beginning at 4 p.m., and post-race gathering on Saturday, October 16th, from noon to 5 p.m. While they were originally planned for indoors, the events will now take place in the outdoor parking lot due to the concerns of COVID and the large number of expected participants. FSISD implements mask incentives by Nathan Heuer. Mask-wearing incentives are now in place or will soon be in place at each Fort Stockton Independent School District campus for students who pledge to wear their mask every day when indoors. Principals at each campus were given the authority by the Fort Stockton ISD to put incentives in place that were best fitted for their campus due to the range of motivational factors between age groups. The board voted to give authority to principals at the group's last meeting on August 30. The incentives in place will be reviewed every nine-week period. The first nine-week period, grading period, will end October 15th. The board, along with Superintendent Dr. Gabriel Zamora, will determine whether to keep the incentives in place. Zamora said earlier in the week, with COVID active cases numbers on the rise in the county, there's a good possibility that the board will decide to keep the incentives in place for another 9 weeks. I see at least one more nine-week grading period of mask incentives. For a while, we dipped into the 20s, but now we're back up. Starting this week at the high school, Principal Roy Alvarado decided to have a drawing for Panther Bucks vouchers, which can be redeemed at concessions at home athletic events. There will be five students who win every week, according to Alvarado. Vouchers will be eligible for use until the end of the school year. Alvarado stated that the incentive can change upon approval. Fort Stockton Middle School students will be allowed to wear joggers and or team jerseys to school if they take the pledge. The intermediate school will have their weekly incentives take place on Fridays. Those incentives will alternate between extra recess and spirit tattoos. Apace students will receive caught wearing mask tickets. The tickets will be placed in a box for a daily drawing. One boy and one girl will win a prize item each day. Prizes include candy, treats, pencils, and bookmarks. Students at Alamo who take the pledge will have a monthly chip party and receive stickers as well. The next school board meeting is scheduled for October 18th. Pumpkin Patch Now Open by Jeremy Gonzalez. Get ready for some fall fun. The Mandahano Brothers Produce Pumpkin Patch is finally back with plenty to offer this year. The festive pumpkin patch is located at 4797 Watermelon Road in Cuyahnosa, which makes an easy 30-minute day trip from Fort Stockton. The pumpkin patch will be open to the public exclusively in October on Saturdays and Sundays from 10 to 5, with an admission fee of $5 per person. The festivities include an indoor farmer's market of fresh fruits and vegetables, corn maze, hay rides, souvenir shop, a large shaded jump pad, pony rides, tractor train rides, summer flower picking, and picking pumpkins straight off the vine. This year, the sunflower field is vibrantly in bloom after being dormant in 2020. Visitors can pay an extra $5 to pick their own flowers and can walk away with as many as they can fit into a provided vase, typically five large stalks. New to the pumpkin patch grounds this year is a house built of pumpkins, swing set, and two giant chairs for fun photo opportunities. The pumpkin field has grown an abundance of varieties this harvest, ranging from yellow, white, blue, to the classic orange. A trip through the corn maze is an optional and entertaining route to the pumpkins. You and your family will be able to search through thousands of pumpkins of all shapes and sizes. Don't miss out this October. The Mandahano Brothers Pumpkin Patch has more to offer than ever before. For more information, visit mandahanobrothers.com. Vaccination Rates Increase by Nathan Hewer. The number of Pecos County residents who have received at least one dose of the COVID vaccine is nearing 75%, as reported on October 5th. Of the vaccine-eligible residents in the county, 9,492 people have received at least one dose of a COVID vaccine, and 8,093 people are fully vaccinated. There are 334 Pecos County residents who have received a booster shot. Vaccinations have proven to be effective in the county for protection from COVID, according to reported data. There has been 277 vaccine-eligible people test positive for COVID-19 since July 28th, and of those 277, 221 were not vaccinated. V's Kitchen Brings Casual Fine Dining to the Town by Jeremy Gonzalez. Looking for a new option to grab a meal here in town? You're in luck with the opening of V's Kitchen. The restaurant opened its doors to the public 2.5 weeks ago and is looking to expand its menu. I want this restaurant to be different, enthused owner Vincent Ramirez. We're starting off with comfort food options that are familiar, like burgers and wings. But even with burgers and wings, we put our own twist on it. I want the food that leaves our kitchen to have a great flavor that stands out. What we serve here is not your typical comfort food. The current menu includes a chuck burger, chicken sandwich, fried chicken pies, six-piece teriyaki wings, loaded fries, and a nugget meal for kids. The homemade dessert menu includes fresh key lime pie, chocolate chip cookies, banana mousse, and Oreo mousse, all made from scratch. Commenting on the menu, Ramirez said, "I named the Chuck Burger in memory of Charles Murphy, who passed away August 1st. Reclined at a booth, he went on to share that his kitchen staff grinds and blends their burger meat. The old saying goes that a magician never reveals his secrets, but leaning forward, he divulged the ingredients that set his burgers apart. We blend the beef with pork," he whispered. "I'm okay with putting this out because some people don't eat pork. With that said, the custom ground burger is our top seller right now, and we pair it with double fried, fresh cut French fries." Sifting through recipes, he plans to keep a revolving menu that will change throughout the seasons. Looking to pull out heartier selections for the coming cold weather, such as braised short ribs with homemade beef stock. Eventually, we'll shift into more fine dining options with dishes like poutine and braised ribs, he said. "But I want it to be casual fine dining where people can come in wearing jeans and cowboy boots, a place where fancy food meets West Texas, with no expectations of wearing a suit and tie. I want people to come to Fort Stockton to eat, not to have to travel to Marathon, Marfa, or Alpine for exquisite food." Currently, V's Kitchen has limited indoor dining and focuses more on takeout and drive-through services, but a few tables are available for those who would like to come sit down and share a meal. "Right now, we're fully staffed. I have a great group of people working with me. It takes a good team to make things happen. I have a lot of ambitions for V's Kitchen. Further down the line, I want to bring in a bakery. I really hope to bring in dishes people have never heard of and expand the variety here in Fort Stockton. We're not trying to do anything traditional. We're doing it our way. V's Kitchen current hours are 11 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. for lunch and 5 p.m. to 8:30 p.m. for dinner. Closed Tuesdays and Sunday evenings."
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, September 30th. Council cans East Side apartment rezoning request. The story was written by Smokey Briggs. Tuesday's meeting of the Monahan City Council did not draw as many citizens as the last meeting, but the main topic was the same, as proposed ordinance number 1294 came up for a second reading and final vote. During the public meeting regarding the ordinance at the last meeting, 14 citizens were on hand in opposition to the rezoning request, one of whom presented an unverified petition with 50 signatures also opposing the rezoning. If approved, the ordinance would change the zoning for lots 1, 2, 3, and 4 of Block 23 of the East Monahan subdivision from single-family to multifamily. The lots are sandwiched behind the 828 car wash to the south and a runoff water retention pond to the north. After the first reading, the council voted unanimously against the request, but that vote could have been overturned on the second reading. The request for rezoning was made by Paso Emine, owner of Paso Construction. Emine did not attend the first meeting, but was on hand Tuesday, where he explained he hoped to build a 20-unit apartment complex on the site. Emine told the council that while he understood local homeowners' opposition to the change, that the proposed apartment complex would not depress nearby property values, as he planned to build a nice complex that would complement the area. Quote, "If you put homes there, nobody will buy them with a car wash in front and the detention pond behind them. These will not be low-income apartments, two-story brick and stucco. It will not decrease the value of the area," he said. Emine pointed out that he had just finished building a four-unit complex on Betty Avenue as an example of what he had planned. Quote, It would be better to have something on those lots rather than nothing, he said. Ashley Adalto, executive director of Monahan's Economic Development, also spoke in favor of the zoning change. Quote, Paso has been all over town building quality homes, she said. The utilities are already in, and Monahan's needs apartments. I think Paso will build something worthy of our community, and I would ask that you take that into consideration. End quote. Before taking a vote, Councilman Jeppy Wilson told M&E that the council's first duty was to the people they represent. Quote, This is about the people we represent. It has nothing to do with you personally. I need to go along with what they want. That is not happening in our country at the federal level, but thankfully it is at the state level and mostly at the local level. Personally, I think the apartments would be good, but it is not my opinion that is important, but rather the opinion of the people I represent. A majority of the people who have spoken to us, no, all of the people, were opposed to this change. We represent them, and we should say no, Wilson said. The council then voted unanimously to reject the zoning change with all members present. In other business, the council resolved to enter into an agreement with Texas Department of Transportation regarding two Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act grants for monies to be used for airport projects, one for $30,000 and one for $13,000. City Manager Rex Thee told the council that there was already a plan underway to use some of the money to clean and repair the taxiways at Roy Hurd Municipal Airport. The council also agreed to accept the terms of the Texas Opioid Abatement Fund Council and Settlement Allocation Term Sheet, through which the state is allocating money recovered through litigation against pharmaceutical companies in regards to damage done by the opioid crisis. Quote, The state of Texas will receive $1.1 billion in settlement for all of the problems caused by opioids, Thee told the council. The city's cut of the settlement totals $5,849, and Thee told the council that the money could be used for training funds for the police department. After a brief executive session, the council reconvened an open session to appoint two people to new terms on the Monahan's Economic Development Corporation Board. Outgoing board member Camilla Blum has served the maximum 2 years and could not be reappointed. Current member Richard Irwin has served one term and was reappointed by the council. Renee Heflin was appointed to fill the other slot. A Weekend of Legends. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The homecoming for Monahan's High School was nothing short of legendary, perhaps one of the most memorable in many years. The first legendary event was the return of the bonfire last Wednesday that had been absent since 2004. The evening attracted hundreds of people. On Friday night, Victoria Flores was crowned as the 2021 Homecoming Queen in pregame activities. The Monahan's Lobos continue a legendary football year as they continue to run roughshod over opponents by adding El Paso Riverside to the victory list at 5-0 on the season with a 35-21 victory. But perhaps the most significant legends of the homecoming weekend were the induction of four new members to the Monahan's Hall of Honor, Lobos for Life, and tributes to legendary alumni Ed Foster and coach Paul Abels. Monahan's Hall of Honor recognizes four outstanding individuals in four categories: Alumni Award, Extracurricular Award, Employee Award, Supportive Community Member Award. These four individuals were honored in a special ceremony at the Walker Junior High Auditorium on Saturday evening, and all are legends in their own right. Alumni Award. Dexter Nichols is a lifelong resident of Monahan's, having graduated from Monahan's High School in 1966. He is a United States Marine Corps veteran, serving from 1968 until 1972. After returning to Monahans from his military service, he worked with Wilson Supply and Victaulic Services. In 1976, he started Larry's Tubing Testers with his dad. The company was sold in 1997, and Dexter worked for Baker Hughes from 1997 until he retired in 2013. He has served as the Ward County Commissioner since 2005, a position he still holds. Perhaps Dexter is most well known for being the voice of the Monahans Lobos from 1997 until 2020. Extracurricular Employee Award. Bren Holland has had a long and successful career coaching and teaching in the state of Texas, especially in the West Texas region. Holland served in various coaching positions in Monahans, including freshman and JV football, assistant and head baseball coach, and as head football coach and athletic director from 1985 to 1986. He started his coaching career in 1969 at Buena Vista ISD in Imperial, Texas, serving as an offensive defensive line coach and then as head football coach from 1970 until 1973. He also coached at Amarillo Tascosa, Abilene High, and San Angelo. He retired from coaching for several years, but was lured back into coaching with the Midland Christian Mustangs. Coach Bren Holland is to be commended for not only being a great Lobo and coach, but in simply being a great leader of men. He has certainly earned the honor of being awarded the MWP ISD's Extracurricular Employee to the 2021 Hall of Honor Lobos for Life. Employee Award. Doug Ward came to Texas with his wife Christine after 3 years teaching in California. He moved to Pecos, where he served as a teacher and coach until 1979. Coach Ward then became a Lobo in the fall of 1979 until his retirement in 2005. He taught English his entire career. He taught at Sudearth Elementary for 2 years and the rest of his career at Walker Junior High. He coached basketball, football, track, and golf from 1979 to 1995. He was head varsity swim coach for 4 years. During his tenure as swim coach, he was chosen as district swim coach of the year in 1998, 1999, and the year 2000. He has been presented the Chamber of Commerce Youth Leadership Award and being the youth leader for the First United Methodist Church. Because of his dedication as a teacher, coach, and mentor, Doug Ward was selected to receive the 2021 Hall of Honor Lobos for Life Employee Award. Supportive Community Member. Brett Heflin is a lifelong Monahans Lobo, having graduated in 1983. He played football and was a member of the band all 4 years. Following high school, he moved to Dallas and Houston to work in sales. He returned to Monahans in 1989 and started Crystal Clear Ice Company with Darren Greer, a heating and air conditioning repair company. In 2001, he began his career with Edward Jones Financial Advisors. He has been a huge part of the community and given enormous support to youth sports. He has given countless hours to his alma mater and community. Brett wears his servant's apron with pride, and this makes him more than deserving of the 2021 Hall of Honor Lobos for Life Supportive Community Member Award. Tribute to Edward Eddie J. Foster. If there is anyone who is a football legend from Monahans High School, Eddie Foster would be the epitome of that person. Not only were his exploits on the football field that transcended past high school into college football at the University of Oklahoma and professional football, he was a dedicated family man and Christian. While at Monahans High School, he was an outstanding lineman. He is the only player to be named as an All-State performer in 4 different positions over his junior and senior years. He earned 2 All-State selections in 1967 and 2 in 1968 for his play as a lineman on both offense and defense. No other player in Texas has matched that feat since. Those honors led to a scholarship at the University of Oklahoma, where he continued to excel. He then had a successful career in the World Football League and Canadian Football League. After that, he settled in Norman, Oklahoma, where he raised his family and established a lifelong career in specialty insurance. Eddie Foster passed away on May 15, 2015. Last Saturday, Foster's wife Kim was in Monahans to donate a collection of memorabilia from Eddie's career, which included his 1968 Monahans Lobo jacket, to the Heritage House of the Million Barrel Museum. Tribute to Coach Paul Abels. No discussion of legends in Monahans would be complete without remembering Coach Paul Abels. Abels was born July 9, 1934, to Floyd and Hazel Abels in Barling, Arkansas. He graduated from Van Buren, Arkansas, where he is a stellar football and basketball player. That earned him a scholarship to play football at Connors State Junior College in Warner, Oklahoma. He continued his play and studied at Sul Ross State University in Alpine. After graduating in 1956, he was drafted into the Army, where he served from 1958 to 1960. He returned to Sul Ross and earned his master's degree and superintendent's certification. He coached in Missouri, El Paso, and then in Arkansas, Las Cruces, New Mexico, Llano, Lakey, and finally Monahans, where he remained until his retirement in 1993. A small but respectful group of people gathered on Saturday afternoon at the Ward County Event Center for a memorial in his honor. The event was orchestrated by his daughter, Kimberly. Paul Abels passed away on February 2, 2021, in Big Spring. He is survived by two daughters, Kimberly K. Abels Branham of Midland and Paula Jean Reeves of Cristoval. New elementary school construction on target for August 22nd completion. This story was written by Paul Cyphers. Construction of the new elementary school in the East Parkway subdivision is still on track to be completed by August 2022, Support Services Director Jeff Jones told the trustees in Monday's regular meeting of the Monahans Wicket Pyote ISD School Board. Jones provided the update in the absence of a representative of Architects Parkhill. Quote, "The floor of the swimming pool is done, and pouring of walls will be this week. Also, the floor is done for the elevator of the natatorium." Quote, "Walker, Cullender, and Tatum schools 95% complete. We are still waiting on doors. There is a large number of ships still waiting offshore to offload materials, and that is where the doors are," Jones said. Trustees present for the meeting were Quint Melius, Donna Upchurch, Raymond Reyes, Nancy Upchurch, and Steve Fine. Trustees Bobby Almanza and Joel Greiner were not present. Monthly financial and disbursement reports, as presented by business manager Sarah Harris, was approved. As of August 31st, $31.2 million has been collected, or 98%, in taxes for the Maintenance and Operations Fund, with $464,000 still to be collected. For the Interest and Sinking Fund, $9.5 million has been collected, with $147,000 remaining to be collected. The cash position statement, also as of August 31st, reflects $875,000 cash in the bank and $32.9 million in investments. Disbursements for July were $14.9 million. For the 2019 bond funds, the beginning balance was $140 million. As of August 31st, expenditures were $46.3 million, and $1.5 million has been earned in interest, leaving funds available of $95.2 million. Total enrollment in the district, as presented by Superintendent Chad Smith, as of September 7th, was up by 86 students since the last day of school, and up by 67 from the first day of school. Since the last day of school last year, Monahans High School is up by 74 students, Walker Junior High up by 28, Callender Kindergarten up by 20, Tatum Elementary up by 19, Sudirth Elementary down by 42, and Monahans Education Center down by 13. Quote, none of our classes are over the state mandated maximum of 22 students per teacher, so we are in good shape, Smith said. Smith also said the required end-of-course accelerated instruction program will begin for students that failed end-of-course testing. Quote, students will be required to have 30 hours of instruction by the time school is out. This will be done in before or after school sessions, he said. Curriculum Director Kim Thomas presented the Learning Keys Pre-Literacy Model Curriculum Alignment and Needs Assessment to the trustees. Quote, across the board, about 50% of students are behind in reading by at least one grade level. Our goal is to have students at reading level by third grade. If they haven't reached it by then, those students likely will never reach grade level, Thomas said. Quote, a district-wide assessment will be held October 5th through 7th to help identify where there are needs as well as areas in which the district does well, Thomas concluded. In other actions, the 2021-2022 MWP ISD District Improvement Plan and the Emergency Operations Plan were both approved. The improvement plan will be available on the school website when typographical errors are corrected, and the Emergency Operations Plan will be sent to the Ward County Sheriff's Office. The operations plan will then become part of the county's disaster plan. The trustees approved the request of Choir Director Austin Billett to have a choir trip to Branson, Missouri from June 5th through June 9th. Costs for the trip, including meals, hotels, and activities, is estimated at $677 per student, which will be funded by fundraisers and/or parents. The trustees authorized the use of the school charter buses for the trip. In routine business, the minutes of the August 30th special and regular meetings were approved. The next meeting of the trustees is scheduled for October 18th at 6:30 p.m. in the school administration building at 606 South Betty. Theft case leads to recovery of meth and stolen Glock. The story was written by Christy Sullivan. On August 29th, Ward County Sheriff's deputies were called to investigate a burglary of a vehicle in the 700 block of Loop 464. Based on evidence obtained during the investigation, the Sheriff's Office was able to obtain a search warrant for the residence of Jackie Dwayne Smith at 2111 South Betty Street. Quote, the search warrant was executed on September 10th, and subsequently a little more than 9 grams of methamphetamine was located, as well as a stolen Glock pistol, Ward County Sheriff Ferran Valle said. Smith was arrested at that time and taken to the Ward County Jail on a charge of possession of a controlled substance, penalty group 1, more than 4 grams, less than 200 grams. Quote, a second weapon, a Marlin 22 long rifle, was also located at the time the search warrant was executed, but it has not been determined if it was in fact stolen, he added. Smith's bond on the meth charge was posted at $35,000, and he posted that bond and was released. 2 additional warrants for theft of a firearm and unlawful possession of a firearm by a felon were later issued for Smith. He was subsequently arrested on those warrants on September 23rd. Bond for those charges were set at $10,000 and $12,000 respectively. Smith has since posted bond and has been released. The investigation is still ongoing. COVID cases dropping in county, state. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. The number of active cases of COVID-19 is beginning to drop dramatically in Ward County and the state. On Monday, County Judge Greg Holly reported 178 active cases. By Wednesday morning, the number of cases had dropped to 165. The number of cases seemed to peak at 219 on September 18th. Also, there were 1,164 confirmed cases, 602 probable, 1,575 recoveries, and 26 deaths as of Wednesday morning. The number of cases across the state has also dropped significantly. On Wednesday, there were 253,000 active cases, down from 273,000 a week ago. There have been 3.3 million confirmed cases, 664,000 probable, and 63,245 deaths. Holly said Monday, quote, "Hopefully, this is the beginning of a positive trend and a sign that the surge is starting to burn out. It's too early to say, of course, but as I mentioned before, it seems like 2 to 3 months is the norm for this variant as it makes its way through a community." Another positive bit of information is that the number of infected patients in the Odessa and Midland hospitals continues to trend downward significantly. This is good news for all of us, and hopefully this trend will continue. End quote. On Monday, there were 16 patients at Ward Memorial Hospital, including 7 who have been tested positive for COVID-19.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.